This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Last Saturday was World Radio Day, and to mark that occasion, we're speaking to a veteran journalist in radio broadcasting on today's show. If you're a regular listener of The Morning Run, you'll be familiar with the opening jingle of the BBC World Service program, The Business Daily. We feature episodes from the show twice a week, and they cover business and economic issues, both big and small. Today, I'm going behind the scenes of The Business Daily with one of the hosts of the show, presenter Manuela Zaragoza. Hi, Manuela. Welcome.
Great to be on with you, Shazana. Hi.
You've been with the BBC since 1999, but you've also had stints with the Financial Times and Bloomberg in your long journalism career. When did you first make the transition into radio broadcasting?
After the Financial Times, I was a correspondent in Indonesia in the 1990s. And then I left to work in Amsterdam for Bridge News. I set up the bureau there, which doesn't exist anymore, Bridge News. And then while I was there, I started doing some shifts as well for Radio Netherlands International. So that was my first experience of broadcasting, and I really, really liked it. I always liked it because I grew up listening to the radio, and you know, radio is always a really big part of my life. And then I shifted into from Radio Netherlands. Then I got the job at the BBC in London, and I moved back to London. That's how it really started. But my first radio experience was at Radio Netherlands International.
Having experience in both print and broadcast media, how are the two different for you?
Yes, it is a different form of writing. I mean, first of all, you're writing to speak, so your sentences are just a lot shorter. Everything has to be far more exact. There's no room for flowery language. I find that it's just much more pared down when you write for radio and when you write your scripts. And also you just have to explain things very simply. I think the less said, the more you can be succinct, the better it is. I think people just, you know, it's easier to tune in to someone, to listen to someone who's being very direct and exact in what they're saying. So I think the writing for radio is much more, it's changed my writing style completely. I mean, I'm much more cut glass in my style and just a lot more sort of pared down and succinct, or at least I try to be anyway.
Do you have a preference for one or the other? And does your storytelling change depending on which medium you use?
Yes, the approach was completely different. I think the best radio often is, and what we strive to do as much as possible, is start with the actual sort of character behind a story. So you want a voice that is personal, that's telling a personal story, that's showing how something, a broad theme applies to a person or a situation, rather than sort of being more sort of, I suppose in online and in, when you're writing for a magazine or an online website or a newspaper article, you can start in broad brush approach, you know, saying the general theme, this and this is happening. But I think when you want to engage someone on radio, it's best to be very, very specific, to look at personal stories and people who have skin in the game. I think that makes it more interesting. So in that way, I suppose, yes, it is different.
So turning our attention now to The Business Daily, where you and Ed Butler are the most recognizable voices of the show as the hosts. But there's no doubt a team behind the two of you that works to piece together all the different components of an episode. What's the process of putting the show together? Could you maybe talk us through that? And how has this changed during the pandemic?
Well, we're very small. We're a very small team. We are a core team of, I'm going to count now because I think I've counted it before. We are, there's Vicky Broadbent, who is the line manager and editor. And then there's Sarah Trina, who does more sort of planning and long-term features. There's myself and Ed Butler. And then there's Edwin Lane, who's one of the producers, and Lawrence Knight, who's usually the other producer. Six core people. And then there's usually a floating other producer from one of the other sort of business shows who comes on once in a while, especially when we have a lot of work. So it's quite a small team. So we have twice weekly meetings at the moment. It's difficult in lockdown, I have to say, because obviously a lot of the ideas are bandied around. When we were in the office, we'd just throw ideas around while we were working. And that's how usually it was a very sort of continually creative process of coming up. You know, something would come up on the news agenda, or you see something on the planning agenda and you think, gosh, that would make a really interesting addition. And, you know, you can just go with it. But obviously we have to plan everything a lot more minutely now because everyone's working remotely. So we have twice weekly Zoom meetings where we get together, and they tend to be quite long. They can go on for like an hour and a bit, where we just thrash ideas out. And we decide what to do. It's partly, at the moment, I would say it's partly sort of what's feasible. I mean, a lot, obviously we can't go out and do any reporting. We can't do any reporting outside. We can't travel. So that limits what you can do and how you can tell a story. You know, so that's kind of been a bit more difficult. It's made things much more difficult. That's basically how we do it. But it's, you know, it's a very creative process. People throw ideas around, other people tear the ideas down. Well, we've done that, or no, that won't work. And how are we going to get that voice on? And that's not going to work. Or this will make a really interesting story. I mean, partly it's what's interesting, what everyone is keen on. And partly it's also what is actually feasible, what we can actually get done given lockdown.
Okay, so the pandemic has, I suppose, placed some limitations on the kinds of stories that you can do. But even so, the range of issues that the Business Daily covers, it spans the whole world, essentially. How do you decide what stories and which regions to focus on in the program?
I think, you know, we're based in London, so obviously you get a slant towards sort of Europe and North America, because that's where a lot of these sort of big economic stories happen in terms of driving things for the global economy. And often, you know, we look at stories and we try and think, well, is this relevant? If we tell this story, is it relevant to someone listening in where you are, Southeast Asia? You know, does it matter to them? And we try and balance it that way. It's hard sometimes to make some of the stories, particularly when it comes to the European Union and, you know, the nitty gritty of how the European Union works, to make that relevant to a global audience. But we try and seek out stories that would have relevance or would be of interest in some form or matter that illustrates some bigger economic or business theme that matters beyond, you know, where it's happening. It's tough. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. I mean, it's almost like it's almost too broad sometimes. It's and it's trying to sort of narrow that down and make it relevant to everyone, really. I think a lot of what we do is also dependent on the time difference. It's much more difficult to get voices in, say, East Asia than it is to get voices in North America, given that we are in London. And I do sometimes think, I think, you know, if we were based in Singapore, for example, or somewhere in Southeast Asia, the program would be entirely different and the slant of the program would be entirely different. But yeah, you know, you are sort of constrained about where you are in the world and the kind of issues that you see then. But, you know, the other thing we do is I do check out the newspapers because of, I have obviously have a link to Indonesia and Southeast Asia in particular. I do sort of check out the newspapers. I have friends there still who might sort of, and contacts there who might still sort of, you know, throw me stories and say, this is really interesting, or this is something that, you know, I haven't seen much reporting about on the BBC. So we try and keep in touch with that as well. But, you know, we're also really, really, I just want to say, Shazana, because it's really great when we get feedback from listeners who say, you know, this is something we'd really like to see you cover, or this is something that we don't think we hear enough about on the BBC. Feedback from the audience is really helpful as well, just to know if there's something that we're missing.
And speaking of audience, what about your audience? Do you have a specific listener in mind when you craft the show?
There's been audience research on that. I'm not up to date exactly what the details are on that front, but I don't think there is a sort of average listener. I think they're all kinds of listeners, and it's very difficult to say, you know, our biggest audience is in Nigeria and in North America. That's the biggest audience for the BBC World Service. So I think there is a definite slant towards Africa as a result of that audience, that makeup of the audience. And there's also, I suppose in our program particularly, you could see a definite slant towards North America, again, because so much of the audience is there. But yeah, if you're asking me who they are, what their what their occupation are or the demographics. I think it's all over the shop. I don't think there is a real sort of average listener for the BBC World Service. But I would hazard a guess that they tend to be, you know, I mean, they're English speaking, so they're probably quite well educated, quite sort of informed anyway, and quite interested in global affairs.
I'm speaking to Manuela Zaragoza, host of The Business Daily, a program on the BBC World Service. We'll have more from this conversation after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Today, I'm speaking to Manuela Zaragoza, host of the BBC World Service program, The Business Daily. Manuela, can I get your thoughts on some of the big issues being debated in the media industry at the moment? Diversity is one of those hot issues, you know, whether the media is representative enough of its audience. Is that something that you think about in your work on the show? And how do you incorporate that?
Totally. Again, it's that whole thing, isn't it? It's about getting voices that you wouldn't normally hear. I think Ed, in particular, in the last few months, he's been following someone called Josephine, who lives in Nairobi, I think in one of the in one of the slums there. She's not wealthy. She's someone who's struggling in the COVID pandemic. I think she had her own business. And he's been following her, doing regular interviews with her over the last few months to sort of keep updated on how the situation there and the COVID situation, but also just the economic fallout from COVID, how that's affecting her. So that's one way we do it. Sometimes we have to really seek them out because they're not obviously, you know, they're not in academia and so many places. It's not always easy to find voices that aren't just white and male, basically, especially, you know, being based in London. So it's something, yeah, no, we absolutely, and I think there's a big 50-50 drive at the moment in the BBC, which means that we are striving to get representation, the voices represented on the output to be 50% male, 50% female. It's called 50-50 in the BBC. So that's something that we're trying. But also within that, there's a drive to get more, you know, more sort of ethnic minority voices represented in there as well. It is something that the team constantly thinks about and constantly tries to seek out voices that are not sort of, you know, your standard white male voice.
You have the benefit of working for the BBC, which is a trusted brand in news. But what do you make of the current climate when it comes to the public perception of the media and the general decline of trust in mainstream media overall?
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, I think the BBC is often accused of not being impartial enough, of, you know, being biased. When you know, I think everyone that I've met at the BBC, everyone that I work with, we all, you know, we're professionals. We do our best to tell the truth, to be unbiased, to be impartial. But it's very difficult in the current climate not to be accused of getting it wrong and being seen as being too much one way or too much the other way. I mean, we get accused from all sides, so we must be doing something right because everyone from all sort of colours of the political spectrum always have something to say against the BBC. On the whole, though, I think in what we've seen in particular in the last few years is that in America, the audience has grown quite a lot. And I think that's because the media landscape there is so incredibly polarized. But the BBC audience has grown quite a lot, I think, because there is demand for impartial news, for, you know, people. You just don't have that in American broadcast media. I mean, they're either pro-Trump or they were anti-Trump. It was a very, very polarized media landscape. And in that way, that has in some ways benefited the BBC because it treads this line on impartiality.
Looking at the media landscape today, what are your thoughts on the impact of social media on the profession of journalism? I mean, social media has made it so that anyone can be a reporter or newsmaker, it seems. Do you think this has an effect on how journalism is being viewed by the public?
Yeah, I think there is a sense that anyone can do it, and that you just, you know, you just need a blog and or a social media feed of some sort, and you can just start, you know, publishing news. And well, I think two things. I think one, there is this, what people often confuse, I think, among the audience, and I think there needs to be more sort of campaigns to for public understanding on this, is that people often can't tell the difference between comment and news and confuse the two. And that's where the problems of fake news and impartial and, you know, bias come in. I think that's one thing that needs to be much clearer in the public understanding, that, you know, being able to distinguish between what is comment and what is news. Secondly, on the professional side of journalism, I do think that there, what's happened is that people don't understand, or there's a lack of understanding that journalism involves a lot of fact checking. As a journalist, you know, who's worth their salt, you do not want to get things wrong. It is embarrassing to get things wrong. The point is I remember when I was trained at Bloomberg, we had it hammered into us. What were the main points of journalism? Accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. It was hammered into us. Accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. That was just so important. And fact checking is laborious. It is not cheap. You know, doing journalism properly, checking your facts, going over information, making double checking information. It's not something you can do on the cheap. It's not something you do, you know, just off the back of your sort of easily or without much of a budget or without any sort of help from a production team or from an editorial team. It takes time. It takes work. And I think that's something, again, that is not often appreciated. And I just think there was this one particular story where the Wall Street Journal was sold this story that the Trump administration wanted them to report on. They went to huge lengths to fact check it and then decided not to run it because they didn't believe what was being told to them. Again, you know, another less professional output might have just rushed out and thought, this is a scoop. It's our story. We're being fed this exclusively. Let's just put it out there. Whereas a professional organization that's worth its salt will do its fact checking, will say, is this really what it purports to be? And I think, yeah, I wish there was more appreciation of that there a lot of work goes into making sure you're getting things right. It really is. Ultimately, what journalism is about. It's about getting things right and distinguishing between what is comment and what is news.
One final question, Manuela, before I let you go. The COVID-19 pandemic has pretty much thrown the world for a loop. And looking at the year ahead and the year of recovery ahead, what are the issues and trends that you're going to be keeping an eye on in the aftermath of this pandemic?
All right. How long do you have, Shazana? There are so many. I'm just thinking of all the business. How long do these furlough schemes that are in place, how long do they last? Government spending in particular. I mean, we are seeing, you know, public debt levels go through the roof. The next generation is going to be saddled with a public debt that I think, you know, we can't even begin to sort of wrap our brains are around right now. It's going to be absolutely massive. Who's going to pay that off? What effect is that going to have on general economies, on care for the elderly, on services like health services? That's something I think long term, you know, that's a trend that I'm particularly interested in looking at and particularly keeping an eye on how that's going to work. Who's going to pay that debt off and how is that going to be managed? And I think I do think generally there's a much more focus now on inequality. I think if anything, the COVID pandemic has really brought to light inequality. The people who can stay at home, work from home, keep their jobs in the current climate, you know, amid lockdown, the people who have to be on their job in person, who can't afford to protect themselves from COVID. That inequality is so much more evident now. And I think that's something that has to be addressed as well. I am interested in seeing how it changes our perception of how an economy should be managed, that government's role in an economy. I think that's, I wonder also about that. I wonder how much more the state is going to be involved in general economy. I think that whole idea of a state that just stands back and just lets things happen, that's just not possible anymore amid this pandemic, is it? I mean, we've seen businesses across the developed world in particular turn to their governments for help. How long is that help going to go on? There are just so many issues, and issues also about working from home. Is that going to be the standard way of working now? I mean, it's been shown to work. So, you know, economies are managing, businesses are managing with people working remotely. What does that mean for public transport systems? What does that mean for transport systems generally? What does that mean for the travel industry, tourism industry? Will people travel again like as they did before? There are so many ramifications. And I do think, I do think that in future we will look back, especially if you know, the COVID vaccine program being rolled out now, well, if they don't stop transmission, if there is constant mutations, if perhaps lockdowns are going to be a way of life now, that maybe we do end up with sort of regular lockdowns every time a new variant of the COVID disease comes around, and the medical establishment has to come up with a new vaccine or tweak the existing vaccine. How does that affect economies? How does that affect the way we work? How does that affect the way we live? I think there's no end of ramifications. And I do think we'll have this thing where we look back and think there's a moment, there's pre-COVID and then there's post-COVID, and things will be very different from now on. I could be wrong. You know, I hope I'm wrong. I hope actually this all blows over, and can only hope.
We can only hope. And from what I hear, it's fodder for Business Daily programs for many moons to come, which we'll be looking forward to listening to. Manuela, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Shazana, it was great. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Manuela Zaragoza, BBC journalist and host of The Business Daily. You can catch The Business Daily here on The Morning Run every Tuesday and Wednesday, or check out the backlist on the BBC website. Tune in Monday next week for more on Pressing Matters. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then it's over to Enterprise. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.